All right. I was all nervous. No. I said to my wife, I was leaving the house, and I said, how do I do this again? And I said that to Billy. Billy said, you just open your mouth and words come out. I said, yeah, that's right. I remember that now. That's what I first told her the first time I did it. I said, I'll open my mouth and words will come out. Okay. So hopefully that kind of got us right back where we left off, right back in the groove there. I don't know that I want to, how do I want to explain this? I don't wish what I went through on anybody. Okay, this pneumonia thing. And some of you have family members or yourselves who've gotten very sick, or you, this may happen to you at some point. Take full advantage to learn the lessons that he may want to be showing you during that. Okay? I learned a lot about my wife, a lot about me, and how we care about each other and the way we take care of each other in positive ways. I'm saying in good ways. I mean, but other people have gotten sick and they've learned nothing, and it's not helped anything because all they focused on is that they were sick. Okay? And I learned that I need to slow down. Okay? Yeah, some people are applauding for that. I had an argument. See, this is... Hold on. Let's go to what we taught today. I had an argument with my nurse practitioner. I'm not qualified to argue with her. Okay? She told me that I was stressed. I said, I don't stress. The problem was we were using two different definitions. Okay? Working 100 hours a week apparently is stressful to the body. I was thinking only of stress as when I talk to people to tell me how stressed they are, it's the fear, the anxiety, the panic, the frustration, the overwhelm that they get. I don't get that. But this body apparently can't do what I was doing with it. It stressed my organs, my kidneys, my livers, whatever, my really was, whatever it was, I got a whole lab report. And so I have some things I need to address, but mostly it's because I have stressed my system. So if I just learn yourself, learn what you need to learn, because this is a blind spot for me. I just felt like I could just go, which maybe my system could have handled more 15, 20 years ago, but I'm still trying to do it. And the only way to get me to stop was to give me full-blown pneumonia and make it so I couldn't even get out of a chair. And I couldn't without someone literally pulling me out of the chair, okay? And so I had to stop. I couldn't even sit and try to do work because my mind couldn't focus on that kind of stuff because I was in 102 fever, you know, for like 2 weeks. So if you are to get anything happening to you that kind of shuts you down for a while, there may be something to learn in it beyond just the fact that time and chance and you got sick, COVID, or whatever you got, right? But there may be some other stuff. And so you will see that, hopefully you'll see that I will be doing a little bit less during the feast. You see how I let Billy do some of the stuff today, so I got to go sit in my office and just kind of relax, because after doing all the stuff I did this morning with zone 2 and everything else, these things fatigue me, okay? I have damage to my lungs, I have scarring to my lungs, because that's what a pneumonia will do to you. And until that all heals, I have to remember that, you know, I will get fatigued. And as it is, I've got the rest of this service, then 2 leadership meetings tomorrow and a wedding, you know. So I have to try to pace myself more than I've done in the past. So this is what I'm teaching you, though, here, the same thing. I was in a delusion that these things were not affecting me, okay? Because in my mind, I was only looking at a very narrow band understanding of stress. Okay? And I don't think delusional at all. I don't stress that other way. People will tell you, I don't get anxiety about things that other people do, and I don't. But the strain, the stress on the body, pushing it the way I do, etc., I had allowed myself to be blind to how much it was affecting things. I just thought I could just go. I told people all the time, I know my limits. I'm not hitting my limits. I was wrong. I'm humbly going to stand before you and tell you I was wrong, okay? But I thought I could just, you know. So be honest with yourself. And sometimes Abba may, if you're not able to do it, he may have to do what he did to me. He might have to get your attention some way where you have no choice. But just like in the verses here, I was trying to argue with the person that really knew better than I said, okay, maybe I'm not understanding. And then she explained it to me and I ended up agreeing. okay? Because I only could see that one narrow band. When I hear the word stress, I'm thinking anxiety, panic, fear, what most people go through when they say they're stressed. This is more physical stress. So then my body responded with stress response, okay? When it was pushed too far. Okay, so these words I just took for myself too as I'm reading it because I saw myself doing some of that, okay? All right, so this is called the afterburn. So if you have comments or questions, you can raise your hand. And Steve is coming around with the mic, and then we've got Rob on the live stream desk. You got Kurt on there too? All right. And so you guys on live stream, please behave and show respect to those guys. All right. Most of you do. Occasionally we get some new people that don't understand because they haven't gotten there yet, right? Because we're going to not judge them, but they just haven't gotten there yet. All right, Craig.
The detoxing process is quite a process. I don't think you ever realize how toxic you are until you start to detox, and you can smell yourself, and it's disgusting. And if you do that, you want to get rid of it. Spiritual as well. There was a couple, one passage that really helped me spiritual wise as the detoxing, and it's Proverbs 30. It starts in verse 2. For I am more stupid than anyone, and do not have the understanding of man. I have not learned wisdom that I should know the knowledge of the set apart one.
Great verse. Yeah, and that's Solomon writing it, so, you know.
Yeah, that's the, when I figured that out, that Solomon himself is, or likely that Agar, is Solomon, mm-hmm. is writing it towards the end.
Yeah.
It's quite a verse, and then there was one in Jeremiah that I think is an acceptable prayer for knowledge. And, oh yeah, I know that the way of man is not in himself, and it is not for man who walks to direct his own steps. Oh yeah, chastise me, but with right ruling, and not in your displeasure, lest you bring me to naught.
Amen. Now let me just, okay, so I've heard that verse many times, and now let me just take that in the new way that we're kind of packaging things. What verse number is this? I can read it again.
It's 23.
Jeremiah?
10:23, yeah.
Jeremiah 10:23. I want you to hear something in there that, because of the way I've been teaching now and what he's been showing us, when he says, I know the way of man is not in himself, but his steps, but then he goes, chastise me not in your displeasure, lest you bring me to naught. It's not because he thinks Yahweh would do that. It's because that's the way people do it. And so he's concerned because he hasn't understood that yet. So think about that too when you look at the Psalms and David says certain things, other things is that we have to keep remembering he's not us. This is how man would react. Man might chastise you out of their what? Emotional place. And that's not where you need to be. You know, I've talked to parents. Don't spank, don't chastise your children when it's anger. Because now you're attacking them because you're offended, you're angry. Chastise them when you're calm, and then they understand, I need you to know what you did was wrong. But you're not going to come across right if you're angry, if it's coming out of your displeasure. So, because sometimes people think, why would he think that that would be what Yahweh would do? Because he's used to what man would do, okay? And he's asking him, don't do to me what man would do, do what you would do. So thank you for that. So maybe that distinction helps somebody. You know, when you're looking at things, okay? All right, Janet?
Yes, Rabbi, what a blessing to have you back and a privilege to
I really
sit
appreciate
in here.
It. I feel I needed to be back here. This is the longest I've gone, except for that, you know, little 7-year journey thing. This is the longest I've gone without teaching, you know? Even when I've traveled, like, several weeks to another place, I taught everywhere I was. So it was very strange not to teach anything for almost 4 weeks. So
it's really a privilege for me and all of us, I know, to have you here, Rabbi, and listen to you. I have a question about 6:38. And when it says, with the same measure with which you measure, it shall be measured back to you. Is he here talking about judgment, like judging people the way you will judge? You will be judged, or what is the measure that he's talking about?
Yeah, I mean, look, he's talking about reaping and sowing. All these things kind of tie together. He's saying, look, if you're just going to love little, you're only going to get little back. You're going to love abundantly, you get a lot back. You know, you're going to, you know, do something you shouldn't do in a big way, you're going to get some things back in a big way. It's equal weights, equal measures. All these little things that are spoken out of in Torah all kind of linking together. Okay? Judging with equity. Well, you know, eye for eye, saying the same thing. It should be a punishment that, you know, is equal to the crime. These are things that are all through Scripture. Okay.
Thank you, Rabbi. And if you allow me one more, verse 40. It says, the taught one is not above his teacher, but everyone perfected shall be like his teacher. So when I thought of the word teacher, of course I thought of you, but you teach us Torah, which is, you know, Yeshua. So when it says that, obviously we're not above you or obviously or Yeshua, but when it says, but everyone perfected shall be like his teacher, perfected means corrected, grown, you know, like if somebody really takes it seriously, you say serious bone with the teachings of the Torah, that's how we get perfected and become like, you know, our teacher, our Torah. Is that what they're talking about?
All right, so look, in Ephesians 4, when it talks about the fivefold ministry, it says that these guys are for the perfecting of the set apart ones. Yeah. It's the same idea, right?
Yeah.
With the goal being, this is what perfecting means. It means coming into the measure of the stature of the completeness of Messiah. That's the job of the teacher to help you get there. Okay, so that's Ephesians 4:13. Okay? All right? So, you see, Paul's saying the same thing here Yeshua was saying in Luke. And that's why we have to, if you have enough study of the verses or if you have a teacher to help connect things, then you can see how these things all piece together. They're saying the same thing, a little bit more detail here or there. So if I'm a student of my teacher, as we go up the line all the way to the Father, right? Father, Yeshua, the disciples, all that kind of stuff. There's no thought that you're becoming me is becoming me. It's becoming me, it means becoming him. Because Yeshua said, become me to become the Father. The disciple says, become me to become the Father. Become Yeshua. In other words, it's all about becoming the Father. Okay? But you don't have the Father there. You have your teacher. And so you learn from, you imitate, you get from your teacher. Okay? So that's important. By the way, I just want to correct something. Billy, I think in his dancing around, it kind of hit it a little bit correctly when he was talking about the Nasi title. Okay, Nasi doesn't mean teacher of teachers. It doesn't mean any of those things. The Nasi is the president or presiding over other leaders. So like in the Sanhedrin, which was all the leaders. I mean, these are the highest level sages and leadership at the time when they had the Sanhedrin. The head presiding person over all of that was called the Nasi. So in MTOI, we have lots of leaders that are connected with us that work together. I have a role of Nasi. I am the president or the head, the leader of leaders. You know, you said that at one point, but it's not teacher of teachers, okay? Nasi doesn't mean that. Now, it's more of a, think of it more like a corporate structure or a political structure where there's a certain amount of leadership, but somebody has the deciding authority. So the highest authority over other authorities was known as the Nasi. Okay, just wanted to kind of, so because some people still have a problem with the rabbi thing, fine, so they call me Nasi, which is fine, okay? Because that's an appropriate title, because that is my role in this group. If you are a leader over other leaders, that could be an appropriate title, okay? Next question.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. You know, we were reading the parsha for this week, the first parsha from Vayikra, and there was a verse there that said, whoever goes against the set-apart matters of Yahweh, you know, it was talking about the offerings and all the things that we had to do or they had to do. So when you were saying that we don't take this serious enough, it really brought back that verse because I would think it really got my attention. The set apart matters of Yahweh really is, he's so above, I mean, if we go against him, we're going up above the highest law ever that will ever be, right? So being serious about it means recognizing with awe and reverence that he really is the utmost, the most, the highest of ever. And going, it's like if we're going against what he's reading, we're really going against him.
Amen.
So I just wanted to mention that. Thank you.
Okay. Now you do realize that means you can't say that again on Tuesday. Because it's for this week's Torah portion. Okay. Let me re-clarify something that I think is important. I don't think for one second that you're not serious. I think there are areas that you are avoiding being serious about, that you're still not comfortable to be serious about, or you're not comfortable to yield to the reality of what's in that space, whether it's counseling, submission, some sort. There's still, now you're, I know you're incredibly serious about some aspects of this, maybe huge amounts of aspects of this. What you want to find is where are you still reluctant to be on board? What are those areas? That's the problem, okay? I know you're here because you're serious. You're sitting through a 4-hour service. You have to be serious. Okay? But examine yourself and think, okay, when he reads certain things, again, remember, I'm just reading it, right? But when I read certain things and you recognize, I'm not really doing that. Those are the areas I'm talking about. Okay? Or I'm not comfortable to do that. Or I'm reluctant to do that, whatever it is. Because I know you're real serious about certain things. As a matter of fact, you post them on your Facebook page and get in everybody's face. You need to stop that, okay? But I know you're serious, okay? You're not here because everybody's here just goofing off because you're taking, you know, a Saturday to spend all day here with each other. You're here because you're serious. But there are some places still that are very weak. Because there's something about that area that you either don't like, don't want to do, or whatever. And it could be, and often it has to do with the vertical structure and submission and leadership. Because that's the hardest part. Because that's the part we've always had so much abuse and neglect and everything else from. But when we're reading through things, you know, maybe you have a problem with the plank and the twig and you like to look at people and judge, or maybe judge not lest you be judged. Whatever it is, when you hear it, you have to be asking yourself all the time, am I serious about that? Am I serious about that? Every time a teaching's going, just keep asking yourself, I wonder if I'm serious about that. Oh, wait a minute, I know I'm not serious about that. Write it down, okay, or something. Because I know you're serious in general, okay? But just like a tiny little bit of poison will kill you, one little bit of not serious area in your life is going to kill you too. This isn't a game. Like she said, this is the most serious stuff there is. Our Most High expects complete, complete submission and obedience and trust that what he teaches us to do will benefit us and give us the things he promised. Okay? But he expects that you will do everything that he says. And that means even the things that you don't want to do. And a lot of you have to look inside and go, what is it that I'm still, I don't want to do that, okay? And those are the areas that we're talking about, all right? Okay, because that's where you struggle. That's where the delusion still is, the toxicity. It's mostly it's pride, too. I don't want to do that. I don't want to talk to him. I don't like him. I don't like the way he talks to people. All right, hold on to that and see what that does for you. You're going to have to figure it out. I've had people tell me, I'll never counsel with you. I said, okay, that's your problem. What do you want me to do? Okay. All right, Steve.
All right, I come up with the word, I was let her go, but in 46 was a la carte. We got to stop treating the covenant like it's a la carte. We can't do what
that's,
we want.
Well said, I like that. It's not a la carte. You got to do it all. Okay? There's no like pick from here and pick from there and whatever. And by the way, what I just said, like when I've said that people have said, I'll never counsel you, and I was like, well, I don't. What you do or not do is not going to affect me. It's going to affect you. Okay? What's going to affect me is if you do come, what I do. You understand what I'm saying? But if you choose not to come, that doesn't affect me. It's less work for me. I'm not saying that in a flippant way. I'm just saying. I'm not going to get judged on. I'm going to get judged on what happens when you do come to me. Okay? Steve?
All right. And then in 36, at the beginning, is talking about compassion. But I wanted to make the comment, just because we expect others to be compassionate doesn't mean we should not take responsibility for our actions, accept the consequences of our actions. Because even Abba, I believe, is compassionate in serving up consequences.
Okay. Listen, you know what? I'm really glad you said that because it triggered something that I can really... Never! Some of you are thinking, Billy didn't talk to us like this. All right. Never, listen to me, never get in anybody's face and say, you need to be compassionate. Because it says it right here. No, it's not your, look, we are told to be compassionate. And if someone doesn't give that to you, then you should be praying for them that there's something broken there that they didn't give it to you. Don't get depressed, don't get hurt, don't get offended. Well, they didn't, all right? But don't throw scripture and people say, well, you know you need to do this. It says to do it. Abba will take care of that. Now, when I'm saying that, I don't mean like unless you have the role, like if I'm talking to one of my children to be compassionate to one of the other children, okay? But if you with your spouse, for example, or you with another member of the congregation, and you go, oh, well, you need to be compassionate. Oh, you need to forgive me. Or you need to stop that. Don't let your walk be affected by other people's failings. And then you end up failing because you let it get to you so much. I'll say it again. Don't let your walk be affected by other people's failings. Because now you fail. Well, you need to be compassionate. You need to not tell people what they need to do. They're just not there. They're not there. That's sad for you and it's sad for them because you needed compassion and they should have given it to you. But that's just where you are at that moment, okay? And so don't weaponize this and get in people's faces. Take, you know, where Peter and others said what a wife or a husband's supposed to do. Well, you need to live with me with understanding. I said, who can understand you? That's what some spouses say, you know. Dwell with understanding. I don't understand. Okay? But I'm just saying is, and some of the ladies were like, well, you got to treat me with this and that like the weaker vessel. I said, well, then act like a weaker vessel. Some of you want to be treated like a weaker vessel while you're beating down your husbands. He's not thinking you're a weaker vessel. He's thinking he needs to get like armor and a shield. You know? Don't weaponize the word. Listen, it's for you. Or the appropriate authority to use. Not, when I say it's for you, I mean it's for you to receive. That verse about compassion is not for everybody else, it's for you. The only person who should be telling somebody they need to be doing that stuff is somebody in the right role at the right time in the right relationship. Not the person who needs it at that moment saying, but you need to be compassionate. That you needed it, yes. They're not ready to give it. Now you're only gonna get more upset and start a bigger fight. Okay? Don't weaponize this thing. It's sad that you, listen, you shouldn't need it. It should be good if you get it, but you should be okay if you don't get everything you need. Okay? You should still have enough strength inside to be okay. But so-and-so hasn't forgiven me. That's sad and unfortunate, but you still can be okay. All right? We are very weak inside. And so, easily things put us into a place of being distraught and depressed because we didn't get what we thought we should have got from somebody. I'm doing that to people all the time. Not on purpose, but I mean, they're not always getting from me what they want. And then they allow that to implode them. You know, well, you didn't answer my email. I didn't answer anybody's email in months. Sorry. Okay, I've been out of it in almost a coma for 4 weeks with a 102 fever and pneumonia. What do you want from my life, right? But in the meantime, you have to find some way to be okay and survive until we can get to some of those things. You have to get past some all those hurts, all those disappointments, all those missing things that you think you need or you can't move forward. No, it would be appropriate and nice if you had them, but you still have to find a way forward, even without it. Instead, it is now you put all of your movement in someone else's hands. That is just foolish. Okay? Well, this person, blah, blah, blah. Okay, so we can work on that and everything else, but you got to still find a way to be okay and move forward even if they never fix it. What are you going to get? Why would you give that much power to other people? All right? Steve, go ahead. Okay.
All right, and then in 38, it talked about how we're supposed to give, and I thought you could cover the importantness of not giving half-heartedly, even our compassion or forgiveness or anything else that we should be, our whole heart should be in what we're doing to actually get the fruit we expect.
Okay, look, that's a really good point. You can be there for somebody, but you cannot really be there when you're doing it, and they feel it, they know it. You're there, but you'd rather be somewhere else. So when you're giving, and whatever it is you're giving, there should be nothing on your mind, in your heart, but what you're doing. See, we're terrible. I don't want to sound new agey here, but we're terrible about being present in our moment. Because usually we're so busy with the past or the future that we're not actually here, fully here. Okay? And so one of the greatest things that happened in my marriage with this sickness, not that we had terrible things, but is that she was so busy and I was so busy that this forced her and me to be able to give each other that full attention, because I needed that attention, because I needed that much of caregiving, okay? Where other times, if I might have needed attention or she would have needed attention, we're both looking at it, why can't you just do that yourself? Well, I'm busy. I'm just saying, people do that. Why can't you just do that yourself? I'm busy. So sometimes you need to have a way to realize the person. How many of you have ever been in a restaurant and you know that the waiter would rather be somewhere else or the waitress would rather be somewhere else? And everything you ask them, it looks like you're annoying and irritating them. And you're, it's like, I'm sorry, I apologize for asking you to do your job, So I've said that to a few of them, all right? But others, they convince you there's nothing they would rather be doing at that moment than getting you extra ketchup or whatever you want, okay? So when you're interacting with someone that says, give, when you're giving, it should be clear that there's nothing else that your attention is on that you'd rather be doing than whatever it is you're giving. Love, patience, attention, whatever it is. Okay? I've had to really practice, and I'm still terrible at it, when someone's talking to me, to just look at them and not think about what else I might want to be doing, where else I'm supposed to be going, and give my full attention. I'm so ADD, I'm so whatever. Not an excuse, it's what I need to overcome. Excuse me, don't use these things as excuses. Recognize these are the areas you would need to overcome. It's a weakness. And so I had to really start looking now. If I'm talking to Steve, I got to give him my full attention. Don't think about where else I think and there's other things happening and things that my eyes are picking up or whatever. Just give him my attention. So when he talks about these things, giving it, you have to give it where that's the focus. Okay, so when I'm giving a tithe, I'm giving an offering, for example, then you have to be thinking, I needed this money for something else. No, you're thinking, I'm glad that I get the opportunity to give and be obedient and support what he's doing. Okay? I'm glad I have the opportunity to sit with this person and they really need an ear right now. And I know I'm really not interested in what's going on. But they need somebody to hear all that. So I'm going to sit here and give them that. Okay? And so everything that we're talking about, it's going to go back to your intention and your heart and where you're at when you're doing it. And then it comes back overflowing and pressed down and shaken. Amen? All right, who's next?
Last thing. All right, they were talking about heart. It seemed like a lot of us allow our emotions to drive our actions before we get a chance to clearly think things through. And that Brian indicated at the Torah portion, how it seemed that in Exodus 40, their attention was on the inner portion of the temple. So he had indicated how we should be working on our inner selves so we could
express,
be able to express the change from inside out, not outside in.
Amen. And and if David got that camera just right, we could have had you inside of a TV with you, inside of a TV with you, inside of this. Because he almost had you on the screen here because of the angle. All right, who's next? Live stream. Okay, wait. Richard's got his hand up over here first.
Yeah, thank you, Rabbi. I really like this teaching. I like this section anyway. But when you said this morning or this afternoon. I need to learn this lesson. I don't care what others think. I wrote that down because that's really vital for me. But as I listen to the afterburn, I'm thinking, I only like the first half of that. I do care what others think. I try to not go there, but I'm thinking my personal struggle with Shabbat is that from Friday night to Saturday night, I need to be focused. And I tend to want to shop for a pickup truck or a drill press or figure out what we're going to do next week on the 10th. I have a real hard time staying focused. And what I realized is that what draws me away is I don't want to seem rude when I say, is that Shabbat worthy? Or should we be talking about that? Or et cetera. So,
and you're not wrong there. Every time I've done that, the person thought I was being rude. So
yeah, well,
I just don't. I they filled in the sentence for me. I said I just don't, and the word care came out of those guys.
Yeah, it's just a struggle I noticed that I had.
There, Steve. I appreciate that, Richard. Look, you know, we talked about this with the middle schoolers and high schoolers in Torah time. Here at the Academy, you know, we're talking about Shabbat and keeping Shabbat. You know, it's really hard to guard the time. Look, and with the fourth commandment, you know, in Deuteronomy, it says one thing, and in Exodus, it says the other. One says remember, Exodus says remember, Deuteronomy says guard, okay? Because you can't guard something if you forget about it. But once you remember it, now you know what you need to do. So remember the Sabbath day, and then guard it. And it's protective of what you're doing during that window of time. Okay, and that's hard. I catch myself, we all catch ourselves from time to time, with a challenge with how we behave during that time. This is why we have services from 1 until 5, which takes up most of the time where you could get in trouble. I mean, think about it. You come home from work, it's Friday, prep day, you have a nice meal with your family, you might, you know, call it a night pretty or whatever early, it's been a long week. So that Friday night's not too tough. Saturday, you might want to even sleep in, you have a nice breakfast, etc., and, you know, with the family, and then you come here. It minimizes the problems, okay? It's be right before services starts, conversations, and during the meal afterwards that we can run into more challenges than any other thing. And so I kind of like that we run almost 5 hours. It kind of really keeps everybody with something to do. Because the people that struggle, okay, we get people all the time saying, I don't know what to do all day. I say, well, watch the service. It's 4 hours. It takes care of a big chunk of it. You know, it's almost 5 hours, 4.5 hours. Okay, so then you have something to take up some of the time. All right? But you also can plan for these things, you know, have teachings you know you want to listen to that you're saving for Shabbat or have people you know you want to, you know, invite over or spend time with. I know people, for example, that, you know, do Zoom calls or whatever from other countries and they'll talk to people on a Friday night just to spend some time, but they try to keep the focus on the vertical. Okay, we're not going to tell everybody about our challenges at work and all of our other health issues and everything during that time. And except to say, look, I've got something to pray about, whatever, and you leave it at that. But it's not easy, Richard. And so we all struggle with that from time to time because it's so easy just to get swept quickly into a conversation. The next, you know, 30 minutes went by and it was nothing Shabbat worthy. Okay, the rest of us need to do a better job that if somebody were to say, I'm sorry, but I'd rather wait and talk about that after Shabbat. Don't get offended. You know why you get offended? Because in your mind, with your plank and everything else, you were just judged. Oh, he thinks I was breaking the Sabbath. He thinks I was. No. He just recognized one of those moments that we all have that we could get going off in a direction that he didn't want to go in. And you could take it and go, thank you. I appreciate that. I slipped at that moment. We all do it. Almost every week. So appreciate when somebody maybe gives you a chance to pause and go, oh, wait a minute, you're right. That shouldn't, you know, my kids have caught me. Okay? Everybody can do it. You get into a conversation, next thing you know, they're saying, is that really a Shabbat thing? It's one of the easiest things to get caught up in. Okay, all it takes is one person starting one little thing or something triggers a memory that you were, you know, about a project or something, and that's all it takes. All right? All right. And so it doesn't have anything to, I mean, you know, Richard could just walk by and happen to be a picture somewhere of a tent. And then he starts thinking about the tent. So it wasn't even that somebody had to bring it up, okay? But how do you then recapture that thought process and redirect it in the right direction back to Shabbat? That's where the effort comes in. Look, all the things that you are serious about, we'll go back to the whole serious thing. These are the things that you like. You're passionate about. They get you going. You like those things. You like being serious about them. You like making them you're championing those issues and stuff. Well, the hard part is the ones that you're not so excited about that you have to figure out how to get serious about. All right? That's the tough part. Live stream, Rob.
Okay, from Christian, this is, how can we realize what is our quote-unquote perception plank or just personality? You spoke of being emotionally numb, but what if a person is just really mellow and not hyper-emotional as some would expect?
Okay, look, some of these things are personality. Some people are much more expressive with their emotions. I'm talking about you would know if you're feeling the appropriate emotion. Okay? Or if you're allowing, the big thing is this, and I talked to them, you know, when we do the color code and everything, by the way, I am shining in my red colors here. When we did the color code personality test, the red, the blue, the white, and the yellow, etc., my whole point was that if the negative aspect of your personality, your color, is allowed to grab the steering wheel, that's when you have problems. Okay? And it almost always happens when an emotion is triggered. Okay? And it could be any of the colors, okay? The negative aspects of any color, Moses, you know, when he pops the cork, why? Because there was some negative emotional thing that grabbed a hold of the steering wheel. He killed the Egyptian. He smacked the rock. These are things where he allowed the emotion to drive. Now, when he was in a much more appropriate mindset, but still emotional, he asked Abba to kill him instead of everybody else. Now he's in the positive part of his personality with a positive emotion, but he's allowing his logic to say, I'm the leader, don't blame them, I must have dropped the ball, it's my deficiency, you know. When at other points he was ready to just say, good, kill them, you know. Look, he said that, look, the same guy who said, kill me, you know, and don't kill them, also said, if I've done anything pleasing in your sight, kill me before I kill one of them, okay. That's what he was saying. If I've ever done anything pleasing, just kill me. I can't take these people anymore. Okay? And so, and by the way, anybody who wants to be in ministry, you will have that thought someday. Don't take it personally. There's a lot of you, and it doesn't take too many of you to push a leader to say, I've reached my limit, you know? And Moses had several million, right? 2 to 3 million people. So that's very challenging, okay? But you, if you know your personality, some personalities are not as expressive with emotion, that's fine. You know, but you can still communicate, oh, I'm very happy right now, I'm very, whatever it is. I'm talking about when you let the negative emotions, anger, depression, anxiety, fear, to now be the driver, okay? Because then you become, listen, we talked about this when we talked about the nature of the spirit, right? When we talked about the intrinsic nature and the spirit being the intrinsic nature of somebody, where you could have somebody with the spirit of disobedience. It doesn't mean some outside entity called disobedience took them over. It means the nature of their being is now in that place. Well, guess what? When someone says, I am depressed, I am angry, I am frustrated, I am, just keep those I ams, now that is the definer, and that's what's driving. And if you say, I am, and something negative, you need to get out of that as fast as you can. Find a way out, counsel about it. You should never be an I am and something negative, okay? You can say, I'm struggling right now with a little bit of depression. I'm struggling with some anxiety. That's different. But you get to the place of, I am depressed. I am angry. I am frustrated. I am, you can fill in expletives, whatever. I am, right? Now that's your state of being. You're actually owning that as a state of being. And that's not a good place to be. You have to be I am filled with joy. I'm the Galatians 5:22, right? Love, joy, peace, patience. I am all of those things, any one of those things, whatever, that should be your I am, okay? Okay, so if you're feeling unworthy, if you feel, I'm not worthy, I'm not, anything negative, you've now defined that as, that's your now state. And now you need someone to drag you out of that, snap you out of that. And the more you embrace that's who you are, where you are, and what you are, it's going to be very hard to get you out of that. Okay? You can take this the other way, too. This is more of that, you know, we'll call it MLC, Messianic Life Coaching. You could take it the other way. When you say things like, well, I need people, or I need this, or I need that. Well, no, you don't, but you think you do. And now you've convinced yourself because you've now defined it as a black and white, you know, fact. You know, I just don't think I can do this. I need this, I need that, I need this, I need that. No, you want those things. And they would make you happy. At least you think they would. Of course, if you recognize that happiness is a choice, then you wouldn't need any of that stuff. Okay? But that's the whole point, is that you have to be really careful about how you, even more than you look at other people, how you look at you. I don't know what I'm going to do. I just don't think I'm ever going to make it. I'm going to kill myself. I'm this and that. I mean, people talk this way. I'm ready to quit. Nothing ever works. Nobody likes me. And you globalize too. Even though the people standing right next to you go, but I love you. Yeah, whatever. You know, they've already decided they can't receive that. They've already made a decision. So it doesn't matter that you're standing right there going, but I love you. They can't even process it because they've now decided I am. Okay? It'd be like taking this pen. Okay? And this pen has now decided it's a fork. And trying to convince it it's not a fork. Okay? Because talking to the pen, it has no ears, it can't hear me, right? That's what it's like talking to a person who's decided, I am depressed, I am angry, I am frustrated, I am a loser, I can't do anything right, I am. Okay? Because now, you're trying out from the outside to break into that locked in I am. Easier when they say, I'm struggling, I feel like I'm depressed a lot, I get depressed, or I get anxiety, or I get, you know, anger, or I get whatever it is, right? That's not yet an I am. Much harder to deal with the I ams, okay? Because now the only way to work with that is they have to get there. It can't come from the outside. I have to get them to choose to reevaluate, okay? If they're feeling, I'm just feeling something, I can help them maybe feel differently. But when someone says, I am, well, then you're the only one that can fix that. You've got to decide you're something else now, okay? If you say, I'm depressed, you could also say, I'm happy. No, I can't, I'm depressed. Okay, let's talk about what makes someone feel depressed and what makes someone feel happy. Then you can choose to feel as opposed to be, okay? And that's the difference, okay? Did that help anybody? Okay? Okay, Rob?
Okay, from Madison says, Rabbi, can you clarify/expound on quote-unquote correction from Yah and how we can know when that is happening or how to watch for it?
All right. Correction from Yah basically, well, most often comes one of two ways. Either he causes or allows you to end up in a situation that forces you to think, reevaluate, and examine, or you have a covering, a relationship with someone who has enough authority to come up to you and say, you need to work on something. This needs to change. So it's corrective through someone who speaks on behalf of Yah, not who claims they do, someone who does, and that you recognize does, okay? Because I've had a lot of people's lives get ruined by people speaking into their lives who had no authority to do such things. Okay? Oh, God told me to tell you that you're going to be a prophetess here, or you're going to marry this guy, or you're going to do this other thing, or you're going to... And they went with that, and then these people are just self-anointed, self-appointed whatevers. Okay? But if you have like if you came for counsel, and then in that counsel you receive some correction... Well, that could be how Yah corrects you. Or he'll allow something to happen where you get, look, I needed correction. certainly about the workload that I was doing. So what did he do? He allowed or caused me to be stuck in a bed for a month. Well, I didn't sit in the bed much, but I was in a chair, whatever. I was immobile, all right? I could not do. I almost wanted to come to Torah study. I thought better of it at the last minute. I was going to do Torah study Tuesday. I mean, even when I came out here, the first time I came out here, I had both my wife and Uncle Bob ready to yank the hook and pull me out because I was up here too long, even for that 2 or 3, 4 minutes that I was up here, because I was that weak, all right? But correction comes from him either causing or allowing something to get your attention, if you're paying attention. Now, that doesn't mean every adverse thing in your life is him trying to tell you something. But always, when an adverse thing happens, ask the question, are you trying to tell me something? Okay? It could be time and chance. All right? Solomon talks about that. But it also could be that the timing worked out great to give you a point, to teach you something. All right? I may have gotten sick, time and chance. But he used it and allowed it because he can get my attention about something else. Okay? And so that's what we're talking about. All right, so hopefully that answered the question.
Okay, from Michaela says, where do I start? What are the steps that I need to take to heal from emotional numbness?
All right. I really want to do a lot more classes where I can really help with some of these things. Look, you have been greatly, all of you have been greatly handicapped by thousands of years of two things. One, being told that all solutions come from outside of you. In other words, some deity, God, this, that, because all religions, all things are trying to tell you that all of what you need is coming from outside of you. Now, there are a few religions that look inside, but mostly it's from outside of you. And societally and culturally, you've been raised through all the generations that everything comes from outside of you. The pain and all your issues is from outside. All of the fixes for it from outside. And you're not understanding that all of it comes from inside. So how do you deal with emotional numbness? You have to open up inside. You need to get help understanding what's going on inside. You're going to have to clean out some of the toxicity inside. You're going to have to put in all kinds of new ways of thinking and behaving and processing. Look, all the stuff, some of you sitting there going, man, this is such good stuff. Wow. I've studied this since I was like 13, 14 years old. Because it got my attention at some point to try to understand why I struggled with things, why other people were good at things, why they struggled. And I studied what makes us what we are. How did we get to be like this? And then what can you do to change the this into something you'd rather it be? How do you become the person you'd rather be? How do you fix an area of weakness, even though you're mostly like where you are, but there's this one area that you want to fix? And so I spend lots of money, lots of time reading books, going to seminars, watching videos, buying programs, okay? And I changed this, how I saw things, how I thought about what I could do. That doesn't take away our need for the Creator and everything else. He gave you something other animals don't have, a rational decision-making mind. And you're supposed to, you ready? I know this is shocking. You're supposed to use it. Okay? But you don't. You let other people think for you. You let other people tell you what you're capable of. You let other people tell you whatever it is about you. You decide about you. The only one you got to listen to is the Creator. The Creator has already told you, no matter where you came from, where you are right now, you have within you, with the guidance that he'll provide you with the teachers that he'll provide you with the inspiration for you to go get the other stuff that you need, you can go from where you are to where you need to be. Okay? But none of that's going to ever get there until you own that you, with his help, but you can change everything about you. There's nothing you can't change. Okay? You can change your looks, you can change your wealth, you can change your health, you can change the way you feel about everything that happens around. You can change everything about you. Okay? That you don't like, whatever it is that you'd rather be a different way. But don't let somebody else tell you you need to change something about you. It has to be what you think you need to change and what you want, and have Abba show you what you need to change. All right? Okay? And you also have to recognize, and this is a sort of a really important thing, not only can you do it, but the reason you don't in a lot of areas is because you're still too comfortable there. Okay? You're still too comfortable there. Most of us deal with a weight problem to some degree. Why do we not fix it? Because we're still too comfortable, or it just seems like too hard a job to fix it. Most of us struggle with other adverse habits, smoking or this or that or whatever it is. Why don't you fix it? Because it's too comfortable and more effort to try to fix it. Okay? Oh, I used to brag, and my mother had friends who used to say, oh, I just want to live long enough to see, you know, Steve with a belly. Because I used to eat everything, and I was skinny as a rail. I was like, yeah, whatever. And now I got a belly. But I always was like, if I ever started to get one, boy, I would just hit it like that, and I changed what I... And you know what? I didn't do it. Why? It was more effort in my mind to fix the problem than to just, it's not that bad. Okay? Until the it's not that bad got a little worse and a little worse. Okay? But we have to stop being intimidated by our... This is how I word this. Pay attention. Don't be intimidated not by the effort, but your perception of the effort necessary. Do you hear what I said? Because you think something's going to be more effort than you were willing to put in. That's a perception. It may actually be true that it's a lot of effort. It may not. But your perception already before you even tried it is it's going to be too hard. It's going to be too much work. It's going to be too miserable. I'm not going to have any joy anymore. I love food, or I love this, or I love that habit, or I like doing this thing. Well, but you're also miserable on other levels because you have not fixed it. Okay? I'm going to give you the simplicity of all of Tony Robbins' teachings. Okay, the great motivational speaker. Here's the simplicity. Everything you do is always a balance between your perception of pain and pleasure. All right? Whatever is more painful, you're going to avoid. Now, we do things to seek pleasure, but pain is a bigger motivator. Okay? Well, I know how good I'm going to feel if I lose the weight, but I don't want to do the working out and depriving myself of the food. It's the pain that's going to motivate you more. You want to get motivated to fix something? Create in your own mind more pain to not fixing it than fixing it, and then associate tons of pleasure to fixing it. Okay? But we allow others and our own emotions just to willy-nilly do whatever. There you go. All right? Just to willy-nilly do whatever they do. Why do you just let all this stuff just in your mind, in your body, in your emotions? Just control yourself. Take control of your thoughts, your emotions, your behaviors. Okay, grab a hold of the captain's chair, sit down, and drive. Instead of everybody else in your life, your emotions, your feelings, your this and your that, to drive everything. You can change anything and everything in your life. Anything. Oh, but you don't understand. No, you're not listening. I've studied this for more years. You're not qualified to argue with me on this. Okay? I don't think there's a person here who studied this as much as I have. Okay? Remember, I'm 57, almost 58. I've been doing this since 13. That's a lot of years, okay? I probably know it almost as good, only because of the anointing, almost as good as I know the scripture. The only reason I know the scripture better is because of he tells me what a lot of stuff. But as far as actual study, actual hours of study over more years, I put into that. And I'm telling you, there's nothing you can't do. Nothing. I mean, after all, if the loser perception you may have of yourself, he's telling you you could be in the kingdom with eternal life, if that's possible, what else can be possible? Anything. Okay? Think about it. If you, being the mess you are, he's telling you you could be in the kingdom with eternal life and right there with him and everything else, if that's possible, why would you think anything else isn't possible? You could do anything. If you want it bad enough and you're willing to pay the price. You know, we talked about, in this verse, we talked about, you know, what happens if you build a house on the wrong foundation. There's another verse that says, who goes to build a house without first counting whether or not he's got enough to finish it and can count the cost? All right? If you haven't leveraged yourself, see, what you've done is you've gone and said, okay, I want this and I'm here now, but I'm not willing to pay the price to go here. Well, if that's the case, that's fine. Then be okay with it and stop whining about it over here. You understand what I'm saying? You don't have to be over there. Well, but my friends and my parents and my, who cares what they say? This is your life. I'm trying to be okay. But you need to hear that. Stop letting everybody push you around and manipulate you around. This is, at some point you need to recognize if you're not 12 anymore or 15, but you're 30 or 40, it's your life. And you can tell everybody else, they can sit on the side and watch, but they don't have a say in it. Okay? Now, if they want to offer counsel, you can say, I will listen, I'll take your information, but then I get to choose what I do with your information. And you can't get mad at me because I didn't do what you said. I'm not 12 anymore. All right? And even with a 12-year-old, that's tough. Okay? But you need to own your life. It says everybody needs to walk out their own salvation. That means you own it. Your choices, your decisions, and anything is possible. You know, we know with Elohim, with Yeshua, all things are possible for those who believe. Now, let me rephrase that for you to understand that it's not those who believe in Yeshua. It's for those who believe that it's possible. Okay? The reason you can't do what you don't do is you don't think you can do it. I know that there has to be things in your life that you did that you didn't think you could do, and you were like, I can't believe it, I did it. Well, why aren't other things possible if you did that thing you didn't think you could do? You know? I don't want to just sound like a pump-you-up motivational speaker, but I mean, this is connected to your scripture. You're not going to get into the kingdom and all those things that he's saying until you believe you can be that person. You have to believe you can become that person, the person that gets to hear, well done, good and trustworthy servant, as Billy taught for a couple weeks. Okay? You have to believe you can be that person. And if you believe it, then you'll start to do the things to achieve it. All right? If you don't believe it, why would you make the effort? What's the point? I'm a loser. He's going to reject me like everybody else in my life has rejected me. And I'm just going to fall on my face like I always do. And everything's going to blow up and explode. And I'm wasting my time. And I'm just going to be even more depressed because I had this little carrot dangling in front of me. And it's just a tease because I'm never going to get there. That is all utter garbage. Okay? And I had a lot stronger words I wanted to say. Actually, I'm wrong. That's 100% true as long as you still embrace it. But it's only true because you embrace it. It really isn't true. It's garbage. Okay? But as long as you embrace it, it's true. This is important. Okay? You can't go beyond your beliefs. If you don't think you can, you can't. You know, there was a great, I don't know if it was Ford or who was Edison, one of the guys made a statement, says, whether you think you can or whether you think you can't, you're right. Okay, that's one of those famous quotes. Because what did Yeshua say to everybody he healed? What did he say? Their belief healed them. Not just their belief as Christianity might say, oh, I believe in Messiah, I believe. They didn't even know who he was. Some guy was going through town and healing people and they ran up to him just on the chance that it might work for them. They believed he could do it. They believed if I touch him, if I reach him, I will be healed. They believed it would work. Where's your belief? He says, am I going to come back? Am I going to find belief? Our belief is, you know what? You go to the gym to work out. Work out your belief. Your belief muscle is very weak. Okay? Or it's only strong in one aspect of your life and weak in others, if you understand what I'm saying. Because all you guys are getting all this, oh, well, he doesn't know what he's talking about. I have strong belief. Well, yes, in some parts. But you need to look to those areas where you know your belief is weak. And where is it weak? All those areas you're not doing what you're supposed to do. Because you don't believe it's worth the effort. You don't believe it'll work anyway. You have a fatalistic attitude about it. It's So, and you're right, it won't work as long as you don't think it will. You know, it's going to be what you think. And you got to really understand this is absolute truth and facts. Embrace it. Okay? This isn't just some, oh, that sounds all nice, Rabbi, but whatever. This is the reality of the universe. This is how the world works. This is what Abba put in place. You either embrace it or you don't. It's still going to be true. Okay? What's really sad is if you get to the end of your life and you never came close to the person you could have been because you didn't put in the effort and didn't believe you could. Okay? And I'm not saying I know what that should look like. I don't know what the person you could be looks like. It doesn't mean that you have a certain wealth or certain this or certain that. It's just the person you could be. And you would be loving it and feel congruently what you're supposed to be and have the fruit, love, joy, peace, patience, etc. All right? But it takes effort. Okay? A lot of you are enjoying the fruit of sitting here right now. I talked a little bit about my pushing so hard. Do you know the effort that I and the staff of people have put together to build from a nothing, like one little small congregation, renting a building of 30, 40 people to it to be this? Oh, but Abba did all that. Yes, he did. But it wouldn't have happened if I didn't do something. Okay? Abba didn't go around looking for a building. Abba didn't go out and buy the chairs. Abba didn't go and get the cameras. Abba didn't, you know what I'm saying? He provided the ability to go and get all those things. People still had to do all these things. Okay? Okay, and so it had to do with believing where this could be and how we could serve and putting in effort. Problem is we've gotten, and Billy talked about this a couple weeks ago, we've gotten lazy. Not lazy like, you know, whatever aspect of your life where you're not doing what you need to do, that area you're being lazy in. You're still perceiving it's too much work. It's too much effort. Okay? And just realize if you make that choice, then own it and say, I'm happy just being where I'm at. I don't want to hear you whining and complaining. People come to counsel all the time. They talk to me. They talk to Billy about their finances, especially in their careers. And then we give them counsel and they do nothing. Some of them do a lot of stuff. So we're proud of a lot of you. But the few that come and they do nothing, we look at them like, then I never want to hear another word. I'm not mad about it. Then obviously you're happy where you're at. No, I'm not. But you don't seem to be willing to do anything. So I don't want to hear it. Okay? You need to learn to either do it or be okay where you're at. There's no third choice where you're not okay where you're at, but you're not willing to do it and you want to whine to me. Okay? Because I'm not going to sit there and waste my time with that. I will help you as long as you're working hard and trying to get something. I'll help you and help you and help you and help you and help you. But if you're going to just come and get in and want, we had a lady one time used to call, and she used to call me and Robert back in the day, midnight, 1 a.m, having all this problem with her family and stuff that had nothing to do with ministry, nothing to do with Torah. And we gave her all this counsel and she didn't listen at all. Did nothing we said. So she called again. I said, did you do the thing we suggested? No. So at one point I said to her, I said, why do you keep calling? She goes, what do you mean? I said, well, you haven't done a thing we've told you to do. You called for counsel. We gave you advice to do. You've done nothing. And she got so offended. Because I said, look, if you're not going to do anything, stop calling. I said, this isn't helping you. It's not helping me. You want to vent? Go find somebody else to vent to. Okay? And it wasn't even halakhic stuff. It actually was siblings and corporate and stealing each other's inheritances and all kinds of dumb stuff. But I had some experience with that and I was giving some guidance. But as the point is, if you're going to come to leadership, you're going to get help. If you're not going to listen, I'm not going to waste my time. I'm going to spend the time with someone willing to listen and make the effort. Now, bear in mind, I'll give you a few opportunities to demonstrate whether or not you actually have an interest in applying any of the counsel. Not that you have to do every single thing, although if you're asking for a decision and it's Deuteronomy 17, you need to be doing it. Okay? And if you're going to consistently show that you're just trying to get an opinion poll, well, I don't do opinion polls. All right? If I do, it's only because I didn't realize that's what you were doing. Once I realize that's what you're doing, poll ends. Okay? I take seriously my role as a counselor. And so I'm not doing opinion polls. You're going to call me and six other ministries and other things, whatever. You're going to talk to all your friends. Fine. Pick somebody and listen to them or just do whatever you want. But don't come to me for an opinion poll. And I just wanted your thoughts on this thing. How many other people's thoughts are you getting? Okay? Do you want counsel or you just want my thoughts on something? All right. All right, Rob.
From Michelle Perez says, Rabbi, is it correct analogy that as we're the dwelling place of Elohim, and there will be things and people come up against me, but if I Shema the word and have right foundation, I'm on the right path?
Yes. But remember, when you build the house on the rock, the mind and heart, if it's still triggerable, is still going to have the whole thing fall down. Okay? Because that is going to be a stronger thing even than the strongest built house. If you've got already a triggerable relationship with a parent or a friend or a coworker, I don't care how strong your house is and how much you're on the rock, they could huff and puff and blow your house down. You've got to take all the triggers and disconnect them, okay? Get out the hazmat suit and all the stuff and get in there with your, you know, little, whatever that's not a scissor, what do you use, like a ply, something that you snip I guess it's a snips that you use for the wires. Cut those wires and make it so nobody can push those buttons anymore. All right, Rob?
I guess this kind of goes into this from Miriam. Says, is it right to move away from triggers until you're able to handle it, especially when you're at the I am state? The example, I am angry, I'm not worthy, etc.
Okay. And by the way, the word I was looking for, I realized why I couldn't find it because it was really complicated. It's called a wire cutter that you cut wires with. I just couldn't put that in my head. Okay. Look, if you're in a negative place, absolutely avoiding things you know might trigger you is smart. That's wisdom. But you still need to get counsel so you're not just hiding in a closet in bubble wrap to avoid everything. Okay? You're going to have to come out and deal with the world, deal with life, deal with your issues, deal with people that are triggering. Then set boundaries. That's another problem we need to talk about. All these people have real boundary issues. A lot of families that are way overly connected, don't have any boundaries, don't know how to set boundaries, think everybody's business is everybody's business, all right? And you got to start to make boundaries. Now, bear in mind, the people that are used to always being across your boundaries are not going to love the fact that you all of a sudden threw a fence up and said, don't cross this line. Like, what do you mean? I've always had, oh no, and that's been toxic and I'm stopping it, okay? This is where your life and my life have a boundary. You don't get to cross this line. When you do, now you're in my life and you don't have authority there, okay? And so that's what we're talking about. So if you're in an I am angry, I am depressed, you need to get counsel. Because once you've gotten to an I am place, you need a guide to get you out of that place, but that won't work until you want to be out of that place, okay? So you have to recognize that you need that level of intervention, but you have to seek it. Okay, you have to come to the, because if somebody tried to do an intervention on you in that place, you're just going to reject it and lash out anyway. But if you recognize, I am, and fill in the blank, and I don't know how to get out of it, but I want to get out of it, get help. A professional counselor like Janet is, you know, who's you know, or a professional counselor like I am as a rabbi, but I may have to redirect you, depending on what you're dealing with, to someone who's a psychologist or a psychiatrist, whatever that's in that area, okay? Especially if it's something very specific. You may need someone who's, you know, really does well with that particular type of trauma that you're going through. Okay? All right? Because if you're dealing with, you know, some sort of depression that's related to just struggles in your life and failures and stuff, you may need different counseling than if you were sexually abused and other things that need to be processed. And the person has to know how to walk you through those things. All right? And so if they don't know how to deal with that because they haven't really worked with people in that area, then you need to find someone who specializes. All right, next.
Okay, last one. Says, from Gershom, says, with Luke 6:45, says, I'm in recovery from alcoholism and tobacco addiction a couple months now, and I struggle bringing good fruit and not letting overflow of negativity leave my mouth. How do I fight this?
Look, when you're new, the biggest thing that you need to do is be patient with yourself and be persistent trying to take that step forward, okay? You know, look, it's almost like, let's use Alcoholics Anonymous as a thing where the first thing you have to do is acknowledge that you have a problem. And then recognize that it's a daily battle every day. Okay, those are two sort of, you know, I've never been, I just talk to people, so I know that. I'm guessing that for the most part, that's right. I am an alcoholic, which means I have this weakness disposition, and I recognize that every day I have to deal with this. I'm not going to ever be a place where I can just say, oh, I don't have to worry about that anymore. It's something you need to be aware of. So whatever it is you're struggling with will get easier over time as the habit develops of dealing with it, but you need to recognize it could pop up at any point. You know, my mother quit smoking in 1960-something, whatever it was. But she's told me about 10 years ago, someone brought it up as a question, and she said, oh, yeah, she knew just one cigarette, she could be right back. It would just take one. She said maybe two, because the first one might choke her to death until she got used to it again. You know, but I'm just saying is, now she hadn't smoked, and she still hasn't smoked, but I'm just saying is, but I heard her say this to someone in a discussion where they were talking about how that, when they quit and whatever it was. She said, but she knew, one. Alcoholic, same thing, one drink. I mean, so if you've got whatever weakness in your area, it just takes one little thing, pornography, maybe you have a spending problem, just end up you're going on a shopping spree and just wasting money. Whatever it is that you do, gambling, it doesn't matter. Anger, you could be addicted to anger, addicted to anything. You can't dip a little tiny piece of your pinky into that area. It'll trigger it all going forward. You have to recognize that's a weak area in you. Don't let your pride get in the way. Just accept this is a weakness that I have. And recognize that your weakness isn't necessarily mine. Mine isn't necessarily yours. Everybody has different weaknesses. Now, in a big enough group, you might find several people have similar ones. But everybody has their own stuff. And so don't judge anybody like, well, I don't understand why they have such a weak, because you don't in that area. But whatever yours is, they may look at you the same way, like, well, I don't know why you have a problem with that. All right? And so just recognize that. And by the way, Rob, did Uncle Bob pay you to make that the last one?
No, sir, that was the last one.
Okay, yeah, okay. Bob's trying to keep me from going too long here. All right.